Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We'll keep covering the presidential race to start out today, with the latest twists being the implications of Hillary Clinton's pneumonia, how it was disclosed, Donald Trump's lack of transparency by comparison, and Clinton's statement about half of Trump's supporters being what she calls in a basket of deplorables. And I want to start with the Clinton deplorables remark in its full context. And we keep finding the need to do this in this election year, play longer sound bites because the shorter versions are misleading. So if you usually get 12 seconds of Hillary Clinton, here is 2 minutes and 12 seconds of Hillary Clinton from last Friday, prefacing the headline remark by saying it's grossly generalistic, and then going on after the headline remark to talk very sympathetically about what she calls the other basket of Trump voters. Here we go.
You know, to just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up. He has given voice to their websites that used to only have 11,000 people, now have 11 million. He tweets and retweets. They're offensive, hateful, mean-spirited rhetoric. Now, some of those folks, they are irredeemable, but thankfully they are not America. But the other basket, and I know because I look at this crowd, I see friends from all over America here. I see friends from Florida and Georgia and South Carolina and Texas, and as well as, you know, New York and California. But that other basket of people are people who feel the government has let them down, the economy has let them down. Nobody cares about them. Nobody worries about what happens to their lives and their futures. And they're just desperate for change. It doesn't really even matter where it comes from. They don't buy everything he says, but he seems to hold out some hope that their lives will be different, that they won't wake up and see their jobs disappear, lose a kid to heroin, feel like they're at a dead end. Those are people we have to understand and empathize with as well.
Hillary Clinton and her basket of deplorables remark in its full context from last Friday, same day she was diagnosed with some pneumonia. She was well enough to give that speech. By the way, listeners, what do you think? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. My politics guest today joins us for the first time. He is Eric Bates, who this year became editor of the liberal magazine The New Republic. He had previously been executive editor of Rolling Stone and helped to launch The Intercept, maybe best known for featuring Glenn Greenwald, who's maybe best known for getting the Edward Snowden leak. The New Republic is featuring articles right now, including one suggesting that many alienated white suburban Republicans also see many Trump supporters as a basket of deplorables who they don't want to be associated with. And a featured cover story in the October issue written before Clinton's remark that kind of describes many of Trump's main advisors as a basket of deplorables. So we'll talk about all of this with Eric Bates, New Republic editor, and our phones are open at 212-433-WNYC. Hi, Eric. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Out of that whole quote, 2 minutes and 12 seconds, the part that's getting all the attention is one word, half. Is that the right focus in your opinion?
Well, listening to that quote, I'm wishing, as you suggested, that we had come up with Basket of Deplorables for our cover headline. That would have been, might have been better than what we came up with. I think she's very accurate, and I think we have several pieces in this issue that kind of reflect and build on what she's saying, that there's no question that there are people supporting the Trump campaign who are truly, truly hateful and who have been inspired and encouraged and advanced by the Trump campaign itself. And I think that's really reflective of the people that he surrounded himself with and the team he's put together and the choices that they've made. But she's also right to focus on the huge number of people who are supporting Trump out of real desperation. You know, this is a bit of a populist uprising, Trump and Sanders both, as an article by John Judas in our issue points out. The difference is that Trump turns people against a third party, against illegal aliens or Muslim Americans or Mexican Americans or women, and kind of directs people's frustrations towards a third group that they then begin to blame for their problems. And that's really what I think she's referring to when she talks about that basket and talks about the other half of the people who are just being really misdirected and misled away from the sources of their frustrations.
Charles Blow had a column in the Times yesterday that says attacking people's supporters is never good politics. It's never good to attack voters as opposed to candidates. But if everyone is keying on the word half, then he goes on to cite some poll results. A Pew poll released in February that found 65% of Republicans think the next president should speak bluntly, even if critical of Islam as a whole, when talking about Islamic extremists. Then it cites a February public policy polling survey, does this article by Charles Blow, that says Trump's support in South Carolina includes 62% who supported creating a national database of Muslims and 40% supported shutting down mosques in the United States. 38% wished the South had won the Civil War. 33% of Trump supporters in South Carolina thought the practice of Islam should be illegal in this country. 32% supported the policy of Japanese internment during World War II, and 31% would support a ban on homosexuals entering the country. So maybe if Clinton had said a third of Trump supporters instead of a half of Trump supporters, we wouldn't be having this conversation?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think to quibble over those numbers, as you suggest, really does miss the point. But I do think also that you and Blow both raise an interesting point, which is, let's say it's half. Well, what do you do about the other half? That other half is not, neither of those halves are going to go away after the election. We have a piece by Jed Purdy in this issue looking at this very question, why do people support Trump? And one of the things he found in reviewing several books on this subject is that the people who back Trump feel that the line to the American dream is getting, that there are line skippers, that there are people who are being jumped ahead of them in that line. And they don't blame the rich people who are being jumped ahead of them in that line because they believe the rich people are just winning. What they blame are people who are on welfare or who are getting other government aid or affirmative action. Again, the third group, the out group that they blame for their problems. And they see Democrats as being the friends of those line skippers. So this is a real problem after the election, if Hillary is to win, is how is she going to govern with those two halves? And they're not going anywhere. So calling them a name like Deplorables may get some applause, but it doesn't do anything to win them over or to convince them that they need to listen to other points of view.
That's a fair point, and especially for Clinton, who does consider herself a unity candidate. This is what Bill Clinton always tried to do as president, too, which is one of the reasons I think that the right went after him so hard to try to discredit him in every way, because he was trying to be a unity candidate with his triangulation and everything. He was trying to be a centrist candidate that built a broad right-center, left-center coalition of Americans. And I think the right in general and the Republican Party as a party found that so threatening that they had to discredit him in any way they can as being unpatriotic because of his draft record, as being, you know, going after all the sexual stuff. And maybe they're still doing that to Hillary Clinton. But she also maybe in that remark, I think you're suggesting, fail to own that unity ground, that unity position as much as she usually tries to do?
Well, I think that's right. I think whenever you demonize the supporters of your opponent, you're essentially just writing them off. And there are certainly people among Trump supporters who will never go over to Clinton and who she would be wasting her time trying to woo. But at the same time, I think the other thing that Clinton misses in that is the part of the equation, which is to what extent have the policies she supported and the policies of the Democrats driven some of the people into Trump's camp? To what extent have the Democrats missed an opportunity to take on Wall Street aggressively, to defend the social safety net, to enact some of the kinds of policies, to stop the tax breaks for the wealthy, that have created the conditions that leave some people thinking that Trump is the solution? So I think there also has to be a little bit more introspection on the part of the Democrats and a little bit more honesty about what it is the Democrats, it's within their power to do, and an actual policy way to win over those Trump supporters.
By the way, the Charles Bull article didn't even include earlier findings that most Trump supporters believe President Obama is a Muslim or wasn't born in the United States. So there is that half of Trump supporters. Let's take a Trump supporter on the phone. Bernadette in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling back.
Yes, I remember I was one of your first callers. I am just
When Trump first announced.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, and everyone asked me why was I so angry. Well, here's the reason. How dare they call me deplorable? I'm a very hardworking person. I believe a lot in what Donald Trump says. I mean, it does have some issues. How dare they get up there and call me a horrible, racist, deplorable person?
Wait, why do you assume that she was calling you a deplorable rather than put you in the other half?
Because I'm a Donald Trump supporter.
But did you hear the whole clip when we played the whole clip? She said,
"Yes, I heard the whole clip." But she's still saying that most of us are racist, homophobes, Muslim haters. Are you kidding me?
Well, do you think that there are a lot of Muslims and homophobes and et cetera who are Trump supporters?
People out there. Everybody has their opinions. All these talks and everybody lumps everybody into groups, and that's wrong. Everybody pulls little sections. I don't care about if you're Muslim. I don't care if you are if you're gay. I just believe in a lot of the things that Donald Trump is saying. I believe Hillary is a liar. I believe that she's going to be on some kind of medication for her face to be all puffed up and out of breath and now lying about it. There are just certain basic things that I don't like about Hillary Clinton. I mean, I could get into it, but I'm just saying, to lump me into a section of saying that I am a deplorable person when I'm a hardworking American, how dare her? My home burned down 4 years ago when she was our state senator, and we wrote to her office. She blew us off and handed us off to the lower sections in our community to help us. Didn't even help us. So this woman thinks it takes a village. She doesn't do anything for the regular people. She only wants her rich supporters to back her.
Bernadette, let me ask you one other question about the implication of Clinton's remark and the implication of the way Trump is campaigning and some of those poll findings, if you heard those survey results and things you know have happened during this campaign year. Do you, as a Trump supporter, have to at least be a person who is comfortable enough with rampant bigotry that you don't find it a deal breaker?
Rampant bigotry?
Do you have to, I'm asking it very specifically, do you have to be a person who is comfortable enough with rampant bigotry that you don't find it a deal breaker?
I don't find it a deal breaker. It has nothing to do with how I feel about him. He's using it just to get at certain groups of people, yes, and just to sway things. It's political. It's just the way he's wording things. He's not trying to pull different people apart. I don't believe in bigotry. So I don't understand why you're saying that just because he says these things, like she says these things, that we're in one group together?
But with respect to Trump, what you're saying is that you don't believe that he really means the bigoted things he says and that he's appealing to some bigoted aspects of the population, portions of the population, to build a big enough political coalition to win. Did I hear you correctly?
you that he says these things, which because he doesn't have the background in politics, he shouldn't be opening his mouth as much. But look what Hillary just did. She opened her mouth and put a foot in it by saying that. I think Donald Trump talks a little too quick before he thinks, but I think he believes and says a lot of things that a lot of people believe in and a lot of people feel, but keep it to themselves. Because if you think everybody out there is 100% golden and believes all the goodness and all that stuff, you're crazy. People just keep it in. He just blurts things out every once in a while, and everybody attacks him. But everybody has these feelings. Not everybody is 100% perfect. And Hillary just did it by calling us all horrible Trump supporters.
Bernadette, thank you, and keep calling us. And Eric Bates, editor of The New Republic, our guest. We hear that from Trump supporters a lot, that he doesn't really mean the bigoted things he says. He's just trying to cultivate certain groups who he needs in his coalition in order to win the election. But don't worry, he won't act on any of those things.
Yeah, that's a, you know, it is a, you put your finger on it with your question to her about how do you support, if you don't see yourself as bigoted, how do you support yourself who is saying such bigoted things and calling for policies that are really grounded in racial hatred and bigotry in terms of excluding all Muslims from the United States, building a wall, you know, between the U.S. and Mexico. How do you justify your support for somebody who's calling for those things? And she really put her finger on it. I think I've talked to a lot of Trump supporters who feel exactly that. They think it's theatrics. And I think that's where Trump's background serves him well. As she said, he doesn't know what he's doing. That has somehow becomes an asset. You're able to forgive him anything he does that you might disagree with or find offensive because you think, oh, you know, he's new to this. Yeah, he mouths off before he thinks. But that's not who he really is. Who he really is an entertainer, a performer. I think even the people who support him see that he has that temperament and skill, and they respond to it. I don't mean that in a negative way. I think Bernadette's saying, yeah, you know, he's a showman. He goes out there and he says this stuff, and he says it because he thinks it's going to help him politically. But really, the one thing we all know, Trump supporters and Clinton supporters alike, is that Trump will say anything at any moment. That's his entertainment value.
Jennifer in Long Branch, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'm so glad that she's come out and she said this. And I actually was really upset when I saw the New York Times videos that they shared with the rumblings and the words and the hateful things people were saying in the actual crowd. I can't imagine being in there, how scared journalists, people that were there protesting, how anyone would have felt, anyone of color. And I think she hit the nail on the head. Saying like there's this group of people that have now been made that they can be comfortable speaking about how they feel about other people. So they can say these hateful things because the theatrics of Donald had made it okay. And then also you have the group that's dissatisfied. So they're driven to accept the hate, and it's okay. And I know my son in his school last year, I had an issue last year where he had another child come in talking about, you know, what are the Mexicans going to beat us with their tacos and burritos? And you bet I was in school the next day. And I said, we will not speak like this. And I was told we won't speak politics in school. And I said, we will not hate in school. We will have compassion for other people. This is why I'm here. These children can have views, but they cannot hate people. And I think that we're blurring these lines, and it's very scary. And Scholastic even had, my son sent the school paper home, and they had a Scholastic feature of Donald, and my son was scared. Mommy, is he really going to be president? I think we have to face these real choices that we're making right now. We're allowing theatrics and that behavior when we would not allow a child new to a school to act that way. So it's very scary for me.
Are you at all concerned, like Eric Bates was talking about before, that Hillary Clinton shouldn't have done that, at least in the way that she did it, while being sensitive to the concerns about bigotry that you were just describing, to write off half of the people who are Trump supporters in that way doesn't serve the purpose of building unity that it sounds like you believe in.
No, I think what she said was the opposite. I think the woman who just called took her completely wrong. I think she's saying there's a group that are bigots. They are bigots. And if you watch those New York Times videos, you see them. I mean, these are real things that they're saying at these rallies, and they're okaying, and they're supporting. They weren't thrown out. One man was thrown out for his shirt. These are being accepted.
This is WNYC. Because we needed to bleep one of your words, we have a little gap in the way the programming is coming out, so I just need to reset so our listeners aren't confused. This is WNYC, The Brian Lehrer Show, and our caller, Jennifer in Long Branch, who got a little carried away, who I now am going to have to leave just because that word came out of her mouth. But Jennifer, I get your larger point, even though we needed to bleep you for FCC purposes. And Eric Bates from The New Republic, she raises a real issue about Trump supporters and some people who appear around Trump rallies holding signs that say those offensive things and those obscenity-laced FCC required to be bleeped things. But that doesn't mean it's half the supporters.
No, it doesn't mean it's half of the supporters, and it doesn't matter, I think, ultimately, as we've been discussing, whether it's a third or whether it's two-thirds. I think that, you know, President Obama found this out in the election when he made the offhand reference to people clinging to their guns and their Bibles and the uproar that provoked. Trump supporters already feel disenfranchised. They already feel like they've been left out of the equation, that political correctness is on the rise, and they can't say what they're really thinking and feeling, and that other people are getting advantages and placed in front of them in the line in ways that are unfair. So if you then go and call them a name, that only affirms for them the feeling that they're already having, the feeling that you don't care about them and that you're some kind of political or financial elite who looks down on them. So it doesn't mean that Hillary's wrong. There are, in fact, as Jennifer was pointing out, people who are saying things that will get you kicked off public radio for saying so. All she was doing was quoting them. So those people exist, and they're very real, and they're a very big part of Trump's core supporters. But it still doesn't benefit you in any way as Hillary or the Democrats to say derogatory things that can be misconstrued by Trump supporters to affirm their feeling of being dissed.
Let me play Trump's running mate, Mike Pence, in response yesterday on CNN with Wolf Blitzer. You'll hear him be more shocked at what Hillary said than what Wolf is asking about former Klan leader and white supremacist David Duke.
There are some supporters of Donald Trump and Mike Pence who, like David Duke, for example, some other white nationalists, who would fit into that category of deplorables, right?
Well, as I've told you the last time I was on, I'm not really sure why the media keeps dropping David Duke's name. Donald Trump has denounced David Duke repeatedly. We don't want his support, and we don't want the support of people who think
so
like
you call him.
Him
a deplorable. You would call him a deplorable.
I'm not in the name-calling business, Wolf. You know me better than that. What Hillary Clinton did Friday night was shocking. I mean, the millions of people who support Donald Trump around this country are not a basket of anything. They are Americans.
So that's getting publicity on the left as Mike Pence refusing to call David Duke deplorable. But he did say Trump has denounced David Duke many times, which denounces Duke. How do you understand him not saying the word deplorable, avoiding that?
Well, he's essentially calling Hillary deplorable by using other words related to it. But look, the Trump is somewhat desperate at this point. He's really blown a lot of the opportunities he's had. He doesn't have much of a path through the Electoral College. He's looking for anything at this point in the final wind down of the election that he can grasp onto to change the conversation away from where it's been for the past 4 months. And Hillary's comment gives them that opportunity. It's something that they can use, as Pence just very skillfully did, to try and change the subject away from their own support by avowed racists to a comment that might not have been phrased perfectly by Hillary. And that's the political game. It's not surprising at all that they're trying to do that because they need whatever they can get to grasp onto at this point.
Let's take another Trump supporter. Dean in Long Beach. You're on WNYC. Dean, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and good to be back on. I just wanted to say that first, I think that it's a savage hypocrisy that the media and the left has lambasted Trump for basically categorizing groups of people as something, and now we see Hillary Clinton doing exactly that, and I feel like the media has kind of skirted over that hypocrisy. That's number one. Number two is I think that calling any type of political or social speech deplorable actually has a chilling effect on all expression, and that that's a problem. And number three is I think that it's unfair to always try to give Hillary Clinton context, but not to do with Trump. During the Kabir Khan scandal, for example, I find it odd that not one media outlet pointed out that the clothing and the garb that Kabir Khan's wife wore is actually the epitome of oppression of women. And Donald Trump's comment about, you know, not being sure if she can speak, that's actually a legitimate comment because, the epitome of that clothing is to oppress women in public.
But that is a gross generalization about all women who choose to wear that clothing of the Muslim faith. If you look more deeply at the Khan's background, Mr. Khan worked all the time for years since his son died with the ROTC at the University of Virginia. That family had a wonderful reputation in the community. And what Trump was suggesting there was that somehow these were supporters of radical, violent Islam, indicated by the fact that maybe she was there and wearing the garb. And it wasn't even the garb. It was that Trump was suggesting with no evidence that she wasn't allowed to speak because she was living in an oppressive household. I mean, that's not the same thing, right, Dean?
Well, I understand that. I didn't actually see Trump. I mean, you have to connect a few of those dots to really complete that puzzle, which I didn't really get there myself. But again, like I said, like the Muslim religion, just like many other religions, is basically based on the premise of oppression of women and denying women's rights. And I'm not personally saying anything about the Khan family. I'm sure they're great people. But that type of clothing is, in essence, to oppress women. And I think that Donald Trump kind of pointing that out, I don't agree with the way he did it. But I think that entire comment was taken out of context.
I
think that there's a bigger issue.
I don't think that's what he was pointing out. But on your point about the Hillary remark, the previous caller, who was a Hillary supporter, said that it's actually important that she does that, even though it seems to put people in groups, which is what she criticizes Trump for doing. I get that. That if there's a lot of overt racism and other kind of bigotry among supporters of a campaign, then and those groups, even if they're much smaller than half, are being empowered in this society because, you know, websites that feature those kinds of sentiments are growing in size and distribution, feeling empowered by Trump. As David Duke says, Trump is empowering his movement. That's an important thing to be called out in America today and in the context of the election. What would you say to that, Dean?
Again, I think that there are other ways to do it. I think that she should be targeting the candidate that she's opposing, not Trump supporters at large, because really what she's going to do is just further marginalize them to the outskirts of society and the political process and actually push them further into his camp. And, I just think that it's very hypocritical to group people together in any way for any reason. And like I said originally, it also has a chilling effect on speech because, you know, some of these, not all of them, but some of these ideas can be debated among reasonable people and reasonable discourse.
Dean, thank you very much. And keep calling us. Eric Bates, editor of The New Republic, did you want to get in on that?
Yeah, on a number of points. I mean, the idea that he's saying it's wrong to group people together, but then makes a flagrant statement that all Islamic women who dress a certain way are being oppressed is just completely contradictory. He touches on the very core of what Trump traffics in, this idea that Islam itself is about the oppression of women, or Islam itself is about violence against the West. That is a falsehood. You can look at the Bible and say that Christianity is about the oppression of women if you want to look at certain parts of the Bible. There are fundamentalist Christians who take the Bible literally who very much want to oppress women, just as there are fundamentalist Muslims who want to oppress women. It is not the religion itself that advocates for that. It is people who take the religion and twist it to their ends who hold those positions. So that's number one. Secondly, I disagree with him that the idea that you can never call any speech deplorable. First off, it's free speech to call speech deplorable.
Right, right. He was concerned that by doing that, it chills people's free speech.
Of course, but he's creating a false equivalency, that to call certain speech deplorable means you can't call all speech deplorable. There is hate speech. There is speech that we have agreed as a people that is so bad that it should be criminalized. It's very dangerous, he's right, to enter into a case where you're trying to chill people by calling them names or by dismissing out of hand their positions. But there is a line that Trump supporters have crossed in terms of, and Trump himself has crossed, in terms of what he wants to do to people when he calls them names. Hillary Clinton might use the word deplorable, might use the word basket of deplorable, but she's not saying everybody in that basket should be deported or waterboarded or sent out of the country and forced to reenter. That's exactly what Trump is saying about the baskets of deplorables that he's identified. So those two things are not equivalent in any way, and I think we need to acknowledge that.
Let's touch on your cover story in the New Republic, written before Clinton's remark that kind of paints Trump's advisors as a basket of deplorables. It's called Trump's Lapdogs, How He Unleashed the Worst Political Team in History. And you go down some of the advisors and you give them nicknames and you do profiles of them. Your colleague Michael Witte does this in the edition. Steve Bannon, claim to fame, runs Trump's favorite website. That's Breitbart. Michael Cohen, claim to fame, bullying reporters. Donald McGahn, the second claim to fame, campaign finance foe, et cetera, et cetera. What's the larger point?
Well, the larger point is when we looked at Trump and tried to make sense of him, is we realized that he had surrounded himself with people who were basically pretty much identical to himself. This idea that Trump was going to pivot was based on a false notion, not just about Trump temperamentally, but politically, that Trump does not surround himself with people who offer him different points of view, who offer him wise counsel in areas that he doesn't understand. Trump surrounds himself, by and large, with people like himself. He's a party of one. He's not interested in the very concept of an administration, as most presidents would be. And so when we looked at the people around him, we found a lot that helped us make sense of who Trump is and how he got into the position that he is in terms of his campaign imploding in recent months, because he hasn't been able to attract anybody of substance to his campaign. The people that he's got are sort of this ragtag rogue galleries of people who have been politically outcasts or people who see Trump as a way to get back into the political game. A lot of them have no real expertise in their area, have been shunned by the people who do know what they're talking about. They've sometimes lost their job because they're so far out in right field. So it was really sort of instructive to drill down and look at the people closest to him and realize what that says about him as a person and as a leader.
All right, listeners, if you want to read that article, it is out today in the October issue of The New Republic. Eric Bates is the editor of The New Republic. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, today is a national day of activism to oppose the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we will go out west and speak with Winona LaDuke, former Native American, longtime Native American activist and executive director of the group Honor the Earth. Stay with us.